Boomers, big news. A member of the Legion has launched his own podcast all about Star Wars called The Nerf Herd. Currently, they're going over Disney Plus's Kenobi, but I'm sure in the future there'll be much, much more Star Wars content to talk about. Give it a listen. It's very much so a sister podcast. You hear a lot of the same people on Legion as you will on The Nerf Herd. And part B of this big news is that we have way more nerdy content coming your guys' way. We're going to start doing video podcasts. We even recently found someone to do a Stranger Things podcast. And we'll be covering things from DC, Amazon's The Boys, so on and so forth. And it's all under one name, Nerd Out Productions. We enjoy being nerds, and we hope you guys do too. We have our own Discord channel, so just come hang out and talk about everything nerdy with us. And like always, our Discord channel is posted on all of our socials. And with that, let's get into the show. Hey, the Boomers. Sorry for this being so late. We recorded it almost a month ago, right after the movie came out. But Spotify grabbed it for whatever reason and wouldn't let it go. So I deepest apologies from the depths of my heart. Sorry it's late. Hope you guys still enjoy. Welcome back, everyone, to the Legion's review of Multiverse of Madness. That being said, I assume since you clicked into the episode, you've seen the movie, but heavy spoilers ahead. We talk about the entire thing. We don't pull anything. So this is your warning. Spoiler alert. With that, let's get into the episode. I'm your host, Tyce Clark, and this is...
Boom. You looking for this?
All right, gents, 1 to 10, what did you think?
I am gonna say for myself it was a 7.
Okay.
Hello, everyone. I will say a 6.
Leroy?
I'm gonna give it a 7.
Jordan?
Kind of right there. I think initial impression was 7. The longer I've had to sit on it, I think I'm at a 6.
So my initial one was a 6. Longer I've had to sit on it and think about it, I am down to a 5, and that's being gracious. I think there's only 2 movies in the entirety of the MCU that are worse than it, and that's Dark World and Iron Man 3, and Iron Man 3 is really close. For me.
Ooh.
Welcome to the podcast, everybody. Hope you're here for a good time.
Yep, pretty much.
Everyone's fighting in the shade tonight. Let's go.
It's tough for me because there are things that I really love, but it was like the superstructure of the movie that sunk the entire thing for me. Like, it was storytelling that I didn't agree with that contained like incredible sequences. And I don't know. I just really hope the way where we're sitting in the MCU right now is we're incredibly reliant on the multiverse, and like
heavily
comics needed the multiverse to run for quite literal decades, but like movies don't,
right?
Because like I don't even know when Iron Man came out, 2008.
Yeah.
So we're, we're a ways removed from that, but we've done a quarter of the storytelling that a comic would do in that period of time. So like, I don't know, especially like with the Gamora thing that drew, in at the end of Endgame, that drew a lot of like, I don't know. I was super disappointed that we got Gamora back because we can just lean on other like.
It's a crutch, right? And it's one that
it's
kind
a
of
crutch.
It cheapens the storytelling overall.
It does, and I hate it. And that's like, the other crutch that I absolutely hated in it was the Book of Ashanti, because it was this end all be all book that would just answer all of their problems. Granted, they get there and it burns, but like, I don't know.
Yeah, I share a similar. View with that, Tyce. To give credit where credit is due, watching Dan Merle review this video, he brings up a term from Alfred Hitchcock. It's called a MacGuffin, And a MacGuffin is a thing or an object that the plot centers around. That's not really important, but the motivation that drives the plot. So a good example would be the Ark from Raiders of the Lost Ark. I would say a poor example, I think, is the Book of Ashanti and even the Darkhold. They just are really powerful things, or they're very powerful things that hold enormous amounts of power, but they're very frail and are destroyed very easily. And it's just like, okay.
Well, it's interesting because we had several MacGuffins in this movie, didn't we? We had the good book, the bad book.
I agree.
And we had America herself was a MacGuffin for...
I would agree.
For Our Lady in Red, if you will.
Agreed.
Yeah. What I was going to say is the things that stuck out to me is I really like Sam Raimi and I really like his directing, but the themes and the feel of this movie felt more like a Raimi film than a Marvel film at times. And I think it came at the expense of the film in its place in the MCU. I like his directing. I enjoy it. But his, like, I felt there were character reveals that felt like they were intended to be more neat than impactful. I think probably the most notable being the Illuminati team. It felt like, hey, these are cool, these are here. And it was a very Raimi style. But then there's things that, like, the Defender Strange coming back from the dead that felt very, like, Night of the Living Dead, very Raimi feeling, and it was cool, and I enjoyed it.
Oh, right.
Yeah, but, see, I loved that. Yeah.
Yep.
That was great.
Yep. I did, too.
But the larger story,
like two of my points.
Yeah, the larger story, I think, suffered for it.
Yeah, so, like, this movie was as dark as it needed to be. It just needed a better script, I think. So. Like, right. It needed neck snaps and peeking through mirrors, and like it needed that creepy element to get Wanda correct. Mm-hmm. But then also, like, I should have been jumping through the screen to finally see the fan casting that we've all wanted since like 2008 when Iron Man came out.
Right.
Like, but the script was so freaking bad that, like, I felt like he was like fighting off diarrhea while he was reading.
Yeah, like, right? I was so excited to see him on the screen, and then he's just like, hold on, let me phone this in real quick. I just got a hum and a hum and a hum. I'm like, come on, man! This is Krasinski. Yeah. What's going on? And then, well, he popped, so to speak. So,
right, and
he turned into
and then the, like, they're calling him the smartest man alive, which Reed Richards should be the smartest man alive.
Let's give away our Trump
Tony
card.
Stark's not in the world. Yeah. And then he says, Black Bolt can speak you out of existence. Like, though literally the one person that can just make this go away, we're just going to tell you how to kill it. Like,
yeah, I've seen memes of it.
That freaking bugged me.
It's funny, but like, hey, Wanda, Black Bolt here can tell you how to find your sons. And it's funny, but
it's funny, but kind of sad at the same time.
Yeah, if he really is the smartest man alive, I would have loved to see him having contingencies and stuff. This is what I'll say. They really set themselves up for a lose-lose situation because they needed to show the absolute magnitude of threat that Wanda was, but they did it in a way that felt like it cut other potentially equally cool characters short. So instead of using 100%. Something else, like it could have been they could have accomplished the same thing and had like that multiverse's Thanos, say, that's there, and then do what we didn't get to see in Endgame and show her absolutely tear him apart, and that would have accomplished the same thing where you're like, wow, she's the real deal. But now anytime, I still hope we get to see a Reed Richards Krasinski in Fantastic Four down the road, but there's always going to be something in the back of my mind that's always thinking of Blue Spaghetti now because of Multiverse of Madness.
Right? They went out like such chumps. Like, even if we see these characters again on screen in their own shows, all we'll be able to think about the entire time is, Well, if you ever meet Wanda again, that'll take all of about 10 seconds, and you're cooked, bud.
Right.
So
yeah, I can do this all day. 5 seconds later, yep. Split in half.
And then the Monica Rambeau Mrs. Marvel getting crushed by a statue is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in my entire life. I'm going to call it Earth 19999 for now. We'll get into the debate later. But,
should be a different podcast altogether.
Brie Larson, Miss Marvel, flies through ships and destroys them. Mm. And they're like, I don't know. I just didn't agree with it. But the whole time I felt really bad because I'm a Marvel fanboy. I should be the one that's just like defending this at all costs. And then she gets squished by a statue and my brain just fully clocked out.
I had the same thing, but in defense of the film, I think it did some visual cues to try to hopefully maybe make it better in the sense that whenever Captain Marvel in any universe is doing her thing, she's lit up with her photon capabilities and all the powers. There, it was after they had their big, like, fist-to-fist explosion, and she was no longer glowing. So I guess I read that as, like, she had expended her capabilities and could no longer use it for shielding, and Wanda took advantage of that. But still, I get what you're saying. All of them went out like chumps, and it was a little disappointing to see, especially when they spent several minutes prior talking up this cast of people and how they actually defeated Thanos and how Black Bolt spoke the other Strange out of existence and then Wanda's just going through them like they're stormtroopers. Like,
and even powerful Doctor Strange, they just they
and granted that was largely due to him being willing and choosing to go out that way.
He came to them and said, "Kill me."
Basically, but that's why I say it's really a lose-lose, because as much as I bash on how quickly they went out, I can then turn around and praise how well they showed Wanda to be such a formidable entity.
Right. And it's one of... So that whole Illuminati thing was one of my problems with it, because I felt like... And obviously only Sam Raimi can actually defend himself with this, because it's his choices, whatever, but he did all of the brutal stuff, which was incredible, but then the Illuminati stuff, I felt like it was so bad because we just came off the coattails of No Way Home, and all of those cameos made my heart stop. We knew they were coming, but they were really freaking good.
It's 90 different, feel like, isn't it?
And I just feel like,
is it though?
I just feel like Rami was hoping to just kind of skate by with that.
Right.
Because we're getting really big cameos. We get Mordo back. Granted, it's not our Mordo, but we get to see him again. And we get
I don't think Rami realized how big of a deal that scene would be to the overall fan base. That's the reason I went to the movie. That's why I went. I squealed like a little girl when I saw Krasinski on screen. That was the highlight of the film for me. And then he just gets turned into so much Play-Doh. It was just... I get where they went, and I'm not disappointed. Six isn't bad. It's just okay. I'm going to save it for the end. I have a question.
So
I think...
Go ahead, Leroy.
I guess I'm trying to figure out how to say exactly how I feel about this movie. And I think that alone kind of tells you how I feel about it. All of these really cool things happened. There were some really cool things that happened. There was a lot of really cool looking things that happened. But the writing suffered. The pacing felt a little strange. Pun. And I guess by the end of it, it all seems just kind of inconsequential and kind of forgettable, despite some really cool things that happened. Yeah. And it's incredibly disappointing, because the whole Illuminati thing, multiple of you have already said this, but like that was the big reason going into this for me. And those reveals are amazing. We get these characters that we love in this cinematic universe that we've been waiting for. But then the payoff was just odd. Like, it just didn't feel right. Like, obviously, Wanda is incredibly, rushed. And Wanda is incredibly powerful, and these characters should be incredibly powerful and put up some kind of a fight, and there just wasn't a fight.
Yeah.
And I guess it was just kind of disappointing.
Yeah, like
in that regard.
I don't have a problem with her defeating all those characters. It just needed to be bigger.
Agreed.
Make it harder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Show us a Thanos style, like on Titan, when half of the Avengers are there fighting.
Agreed.
Him. That felt earned.
This is so funny because I didn't mean to interrupt. This is so funny because this is how I felt about Spider-Man.
Right.
And it's nice. It's nice to kind of be like, all right, I'm not crazy. Alone. I'm probably still going to be judged hard for that. But like, this is how I felt.
You got a cold, moldy cup of Kool-Aid still sitting out for you on that one, bud.
Yeah.
My thing with...
I drink it up.
So I know I was just talking about how bad the Illuminati thing was, but the Professor X intro like literally made like my giblets tingle.
Yep.
Where they did the that is such a small thing.
I'm getting tingles now just thinking about it.
It just gave me goosebumps.
It is such a small thing, but like all of us nerds, like we know exactly what that's from, why they're doing it. Like it was so beautiful. And I went with a lot of people that didn't like they're quote unquote Marvel fans, you know, like
they didn't quite catch that.
Right. And but they didn't like grow up with like the TV shows, the comics, and like that like I was grinning ear to ear after being so disappointed. Like I was like, okay, that's really good. And then when they're on the rooftop and they bring up it's not wizardry, it's witchcraft. And then they play the WandaVision theme. That also got the same thing for me that, like, that's freaking awesome. Because not everyone's going to catch that because it's...
Yeah.
Musical cues are the best. Song.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And we're still nowhere close to getting mutants.
Right.
I think we're close. Yeah. We're as close as we've been. Charles in that yellow chair? Come on. We're close. We're close.
I want to get back to that. But first, on the point... that I went with people that like are only fans of like what's happened since 2008, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
We left and I asked them what they thought, like their honest thoughts. And I'm going to do an episode with them as well, just so that way they can air out what they want.
Nice.
Cool.
They are the single most confused people on the planet. It's getting to the point that like, you have to be one of us. You have to be, like full on in like the Legion to understand what the frick is going
on. See, I think I'm okay with that though, because I don't need 16 more origin stories. Like the story's been told. Let's keep going. Like I'm okay with it.
Right.
I as a nerd fully agree with you, but for the future of the MCU, I was talking to Leroy while we were playing Destiny the other night, and. I want them to make good comic book movies. Don't get me wrong, but they need to get away from making comic book movies and just make good movies. Because
Iron Man.
Exactly. Well, and for example, Winter Soldier, that's the second one in a storyline of one character.
You know, if you
but
bring
you
up...
You can go into that...
I was just going to say, if you bring up Winter Soldier, you're going to have me acting up. Everybody knows how I feel about that.
You can go into that movie... And obviously, all of us nerds going into it, we know Winter Soldier's Bucky already. But you can go in...
Wait, what?
You can go into that movie...
It all makes sense now!
Not know who Bucky is, not understand who the Winter Soldier is. The reveal happens, it'll be lost on you, but then Steve goes in and explains, that was my best friend forever, they do the flashback of him falling off the train.
Yeah.
It explains perfectly who each one of those people are. And then they make this incredible movie with knife flips and
The MCU's greatest advantage with its whole collectiveness and the story that it tells across movies is also the leading culprit of its greatest downfall, which is having films that aren't self-sufficient, like that can't stand on their own. Yeah. And I felt that, like, in Multiverse.
They need to find that balance again, because, like, they need to be able, like, I should be able to grab Joe Schmo off of Minnesota here in town and freaking take him to a movie, and with very minimal explanation of what's going on, have him, like, or her,
yeah,
completely understand what's going on. Like, I should be able to be like, this is who this person is, this is who this person is, that, this is why they're doing it. And then you should kind of understand. But with this movie, no shot.
Yeah, that was one of my biggest praises to Infinity War, is that it had such a huge cast, so much going on, but it is also a very self-sustaining film in that you know what is going on and why it's happening through, like, the entire film. It's got a very clear goal. The way that it's communicated through Thanos is very distinct, and it's honestly quite incredible they were able to do that with such a large cast of heroes and villains in, like, that film.
Everybody understands, but us nerds understand more, if that makes sense. Like, that's the only way I can put it. But, like,
yeah,
I don't know.
I wanted to toss...
Good movies, not just good comic book movies.
Yeah. No, I wanted to toss this out there because it's kind of in the same vein as there's so much going on. I think something, I want to see what you guys think on this. I think something that would have decluttered Multiverse of Madness is, like, removing the Book of Vishanti and removing even, like, the Illuminati altogether, at least at that scale, doing something more simple. I think it would have been a better film, because most all my complaints lie with those two things. Still keep the Darkhold in there. Don't write it off as something so easily destroyed and done away with. And I think it would have been a better film for it. I found myself being a little disappointed when they said that she destroyed the Darkhold across all multiverses, because it felt like that took away my hope for the Darkhold to be represented in a better way. I was like, oh, so this is all we get of it, and I just feel a little disappointed about it now. I'm not sure if that'll be the case, but...
Right. As of now, including Thanos, Wanda, or I guess the Scarlet Witch, was the number one baddie ever.
Right.
In the MCU. She was so freaking good.
Yeah.
Like...
Elizabeth Olsen as Wanda and Scarlet Witch was good. Like, her portrayal of it was good. How she was written, to me, was, like, extremely one-sided. And I don't know. I really wasn't a big fan of Wanda being the big bad. Like, the big twist, the big reveal is Wanda's the bad guy in this movie. Because it felt like everything in WandaVision had just come undone. Like, at the end of WandaVision, where she lets go of the town, she says, I don't understand this power, but I'm going to try, and I'm sorry. And obviously at the end, like, post credits, she hears her children going, like, throughout the multiverse, like, threading through the Darkhold. And so I don't know if, like, a switch was flipped.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
But
I feel
it was flipped. So I'd like to respond to that if I can. So I'm with you 100%. Wanda was redeemed at the end of that. But in the post credits, she gave back into greed. And she ripped open the Darkhold, and she gave in. And we see her culminate into the being she becomes in this, where she's twisted. She's something else, and she doesn't even realize it. How many times in this film does she say, I'm not a monster, after she'd murdered dozens of people?
Right.
The book absolutely corrupted her, and when she realizes that at the end... I don't think she's dead, but she kills herself. Like, she understands what she become, and she can't live with that anymore. And and where you're coming from, I just don't think it was communicated well enough. The Darkhold was the villain of this movie, and they didn't do a good enough job communicating that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm still a little upset. Like, it just feels like after everything through WandaVision, it's just like, okay. And it could be a writing thing. And I think I will agree that I think it's a communication thing. It's a script thing. It's a plot thing that wasn't communicated very well. And so maybe that's what I'm more upset with. I will agree that that's a good point. Like, the switch was flipped when she's going back and like giving into that greed of like having, like, wanting her children back, wanting her old life back. But,
right. And
it just wasn't communicated
very
well.
Like Dan Murrell said in his review, when it's a movie, show, don't tell.
Yeah.
Like, don't tell me a switch was flipped. Show me the switch was flipped. Like, I need to know, like, why she is this absolute murderous Scarlet Witch when, at the end of WandaVision, like...
Take an example from Lord of the Rings, the One Ring. How absolutely perfectly powerful is that stupid piece of metal turned into this icon of ultimate evil? They show, and they do an incredible job of showing, and that's just not a cue that was taken in this film.
Yeah, and I think that misstep on their part started even back in WandaVision, where I wish they would have showed more how that had affected and twisted Agatha. And I guess at this point, my greatest hope is eventually in House of Harkness, maybe we get some Darkhold redemption, however that may present itself. But I wish that they would have showed more of that and made it out to be more of a serious thing than it was. Like, don't even have the Book of Ushanti in here. Have them panicking on what to do now that she has the Darkhold. Have them try to destroy it, and then maybe you hear some deep, manly cackle that's indicative of C'thon, who is the original author of it, and start to tie that in, because then that could easily bring in things like we've talked about a bunch, the Midnight Suns and stuff like that, dealing with
I
was kind of hoping that because of the Darkhold, we would get hints at Werewolf by Night.
Right.
Like.
Yeah. That was. Sorry, Tice. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, you're good.
Yeah.
That was pretty much the point that I had on that. I just wanted to hint at it.
Yeah, I think for me, seeing the Darkhold portrayed on the screen, and then going back and doing some homework and reading some Moon Knight comics, and just how like the intro to Moon Knight was him fighting a character that was born from the Darkhold, and how like Moon Knight is also kind of like a monster hunter, and we're also getting like Blade, and we're getting who's also a monster hunter and a monster himself, and with the rumors of this Werewolf by Night thing coming out and hopefully this fall, like, and just seeing like, Michael, I agree with you, like the wind being taken out from us, because I thought like maybe the Darkhold could be the connecting point that connects everything, kind of like the Infinity Stones. But now it's apparently they're all gone. Except for maybe the one, I don't know if someone's going to talk about this early or later, but, potentially the first time we ever see the Darkhold was in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and it's discovered, but then Ghost Rider takes it back to hell. So maybe there's one hidden out there, like it's hidden by the dark forces of some entity or some place.
I think that with how much Marvel films and the MCU as a whole tends to have going on between a lot of different characters, a lot of different places in the universe, it operates best when it has one or even a couple things that are so massively impactful and universal that it drives the entire universe. And for a decade, we had that in the Infinity Stones, and we're just in a very odd and unique place now where everything we've had in the last couple years has felt very like disconnected, at least I feel, between Eternals. There's a giant marble celestial in the ocean. We don't know what's up with that. Nobody remembers right. Spider-Man, yet Doctor Strange is talking about Spider-Man in this film. And then all these things.
That's so.
All these
yes.
things.
I actually have a count. I have a counter to that.
Holy
yeah.
crap. People,
yeah.
I need someone to. I need someone
he
to did, explain
he
that
did
to me.
Say Peter.
Because.
So.
That is the point.
Yeah.
He didn't.
Yeah.
He knows an encounter where Spider-Man happened.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't know who Spider-Man okay. is.
Right.
And that's the key point.
That makes me so mad.
Right.
I am so upset.
I called you after I left Multiverse. And that was my number one question behind what I'm going to ask you guys next before we get into general thoughts.
Yeah.
Or while we're still in general thoughts, before we get to favorite parts, I have two things to say.
Yeah.
But I went back and I rented No Way Home.
Mm.
And the spell at the end was to forget Peter Parker, not
right.
forget Spider-Man.
Right.
100%.
So, yeah.
makes sense.
So, it, so like,
stupid.
They get away with it on a technicality because he says there's that whole business with Spider-Man. It made it sound like he knew exactly what happened. But
yeah.
when in reality, he knows generally what happened. It's once again down to the superstructure of the movie and the script, not like...
Yeah.
I don't know.
Before we move on from that real quick, I just wanted to mention for people that may not know, I found it recently, so this isn't necessarily me pulling from an infinite well of comic knowledge, but one thing that I thought was super cool that I had seen was in the comic storyline where everyone forgets who Peter Parker is, kind of similar to the film. Everyone forgets, but Hulk actually remembers Peter Parker, Bruce Banner, yeah. everyone else forgets and stuff. And now that we have like Dr. Hulk or whatever you want to call him, Professor, you know, yeah. Hulk, I don't know how they would swing that, but I thought that was so cool because then it caused those two to kind of have a rapport that was very unique.
That you can't have with anyone else.
Yeah.
I kind of like that actually.
Yeah. It's a neat yeah. comic panel. You see Hulk say something like, Banner forget, but Hulk remember everything. It's
yeah
quite touching. I think Peter's actually even tearing up in that panel.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's so cool. And I think the logic behind that is because A, Hulk technically doesn't exist so long as Banner is existing, and vice versa. And Hulk has in the comics has kind of like some magic resistances that start to show up and things like that. But I just thought that was interesting and wanted to mention it and thought it would be really cool moving
for sure.
forward if we had something like that where someone remembered Peter. One other thing real quick I wanted to mention, when I was talking about driving forces in the MCU, like we had the Infinity Stones for the last decade, what I'm hoping, and I don't want to put too much weight on its shoulders, and I know we'll probably talk about it more in a bit, but I really hope that someone like Gore... can do that where all these different, like we've seen Moon Knight, I'm guessing some reference will come up to that and the threat that Gore poses to all these deities across the universe. It ties in with Guardians, it ties in with Moon Knight, it'll tie in with Thor. I hope that kind of becomes the driving force, and I'm a little worried because what I want more than anything is for Gore to be that and them to not kill him off in Love and Thunder, but I don't know how optimistic I am about that.
Yeah, so, I don't see that happening. I see him being a one-off.
I kind of agree.
Yeah.
I'm really sad about it.
That's what my gut tells
me. I ruined my expectation of Gore because I freaking looked at the action figure and just know it's disappointing.
I shouldn't have said it in the chat. I was like...
I looked... It's not what I wanted. But anyway, back...
Yeah.
But before we move to, like, our favorite parts of the movie or whatever, I have one question and one point to make. Both are entirely separate from one another.
Okay.
But where the frick was Vision? Or his name, period. Like, no one even mentioned it?
Yeah.
Wrong.
Well, where's the whole Ship of Theseus thing going on with White Vision also? Like... He has his memories.
Mentioned.
Yeah, when talking about the multiverse,
was
she said
though?
Vision had his theories.
Right.
And
Vision had his theories. Yeah. And
but
that's it.
Yep.
It wasn't a lot, but it was there.
Fair, again, but like
communication between show and TV, it's kind of lacking or a miscue.
Like, fine, Wanda mentions, yeah, he had his theories about the multiverse, but not once he, like, Doctor Strange doesn't mention, like, hey, is this what Viz would have wanted? Because he literally, like,
yeah,
had morals.
Yep.
I don't know how else to word it, but like, there was an entire counter, like, point to her wanting her children back, to where would Viz want you to ruin another Wanda's life?
But then you're just telling the same story in WandaVision all over again, which we kind of did anyways. But the more you put into it, the cheaper it gets.
Yeah,
I completely understand, but
I don't know
the complete lack of just mentioning Vision.
I think I
hated, and I want someone to actually explain why his name was in the script one freaking time, when like the reason she's depressed is because she killed him. Like,
right,
she killed him, then time reversed, then he died again, then she made everything up in WandaVision to get Vision back.
Yeah.
And then she happens to have kids, and then that's what just driving this. But she also lost Vision again, so it drives her again. And the only mention we get is Viz had his theories about the multiverse.
What I think it tried to show, and in that aspect didn't show well, is that due to the Darkhold's influence on her, she was kind of beyond logical discussion. And I think even if Vision would have been brought up, it wouldn't have had the desired outcome on her, but that doesn't mean you don't do it.
I fully agree, but they should have explored that.
Exactly.
They should have explored that, not just assume that's how it would happen. It kind of comes back to just poor writing, it seems like.
What I wanted to hear is them even directly refer to Vision's own words, referring to America Chavez, where Vision said, "We don't trade lives." Because I feel that something like that would have been cool, paid more homage to his character, been impactful. And then if they showed, like, her essentially saying, "I don't care," then you're like, yeah, there's something has corrupted her, and explain that more. Yeah.
And my point there is, we see Wanda one time in this whole movie, and it's at the end where she realizes what she's done and she kills herself. Every moment of this film besides that, we see the Scarlet Witch and no one else.
Right.
Yeah,
and she even
does not care about Vision.
She even said that. The one other time might have been when she was talking to Strange, and she specifically told him, if you don't hand her over peacefully, Scarlet Witch will be coming for her, not Wanda.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Somebody finally...
I hate the lack of it.
Somebody finally mentioned her, and I was wondering how long it was going to take to come up, and I've been sitting on a question for a while now. And I think I know the answer just based on how long we've gone without saying anything. Did this movie make anyone care about America Chavez?
I have 100% a point on my notes here. Like I said, I went with a group that wasn't fully like, I made an episode so people didn't know who the stranger was in one of the biggest films of the year.
Right.
So like, I kind of knew she was going to be like a not so loved character. But the first thing that my entire group said that when we left was, did anyone else care if she died? Like,
right.
Just murder her. And her powers seem crazy OP, which they are. But like, I don't know. You hit the like nail right on the head that she was just... She needed to be introduced if we want to get to Young Avengers. She needed to be because she's important in all of them.
Yeah.
But like,
and I feel bad because the actress did fine. She didn't do anything wrong. It's just how the story was told. It just didn't do anything to make me engage with that character. I could not care less.
I don't want to contest. I don't want to talk about the wokeness, anything like that. But like the two moms, that's comic accurate. But just piling on the pin, the Amor is Amor. Like,
right.
We kind of get it. Like, make that point, but don't make us like. You're doing it to prove that, like, hey, pat me on the back at that point.
Right.
In my opinion.
Honestly, I was sailing right past that. Like, that's another issue in and of itself. But just the character as a whole, I didn't mind her. I just didn't care.
That's fair.
Yeah. I guess my counter issue or my counterpoints to what you're saying, Tice, is. I don't know. Think of like what a punk kid would wear.
Yeah,
kid's gonna.
I get it, but like,
they're gonna. I understand. I agree. I think it was a little thick, but coming from like the character of like, you're an angsty teenager with a very, you're gifted with this power that you can't understand, and you're struggling with grief of the loss of your parents. Yeah, it was your fault because you were scared of a bee. Again, that's kind of silly.
It also implies there's, like, in her universe, like, she just got to quote unquote 19999, where all of those issues are a thing. And to be clear,
yeah,
those issues are separate issues, like Jordan said. It's fine. I don't have an opinion publicly, and but like,
yeah.
I don't know. Just
I think for me, I wish it would have been like. I know we kind of talked about how if we have the same thing kind of over and over again, it kind of cheapens it. Right. But I really wish like the core for me of WandaVision is the phrase that Vision says to Wanda when she's mourning or just like feeling like grief. And it's love like, what is love but grief? What is grief but love persevering?
Oof.
Yeah, that's the core of WandaVision for me. And so I really wish there would have been that taken to it. Because, like, what a better way to, like, mentor someone who's gone through that experience to be like, hey, like, I've been there instead.
And imagine if they just added one.
A horror tyrant. Imagine if they
just added one tiny little bit in there. Wouldn't it take 3 seconds of just when her switch is flipped at the end and she realizes what she's done? Just hearing something like that in the back of her head on screen, like, how impactful would that would have been? Like, it would have,
100%.
Vision would have mattered.
I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about that. I'm just like, oh my gosh, like, it's been so long. Like, and it's even like, I haven't watched that show in forever, but that point still hits so hard. Uh-huh. And I was like, I really wish something more would tie instead of a character.
It's the single deepest line in all of MCU.
I think WandaVision was infinitely better than this film.
100%. That's agreed. I have a couple more things here, but
there's parts we liked, folks. I promise. There's parts we liked.
Right, and we'll get there. That's part two on our list. We're still in 1A, but
at least 5 minutes of this.
So. Do you guys want Patrick Stewart as the MCU Professor X? I'm going to lead with that question. I'll start.
Dead.
I'll phrase it as a question.
I'll finish.
Tice, we talked about this earlier, and I don't want to intrude, but I don't know. I think I definitely want a James McAvoy Professor X and Well, who else is going to do it then?
Lots of people.
So
okay.
I don't know, man. There's 7 billion people on this planet. We can find somebody.
Okay, cool. You can't name one person right here. Right?
Like Star Wars? So, name all the characters.
No, I'm saying we already have. If we're going as far as Marvel's going to bring out their big guns and flex and be like, hey, guess what music we're going to play in this? Then why not follow through with an already established Professor X in my opinion, been
as
wasted
long as
in
James
other movies.
McAvoy also means we get a Michael Fassbender Magneto, then I'm on board.
100%.
I agree. I agree. Absolutely.
So I don't have an opinion on who freaking does it. I just don't want Patrick Stewart.
He's too. I love Patrick Stewart. Give me 20 years ago, Patrick Stewart.
He's fantastic.
The poor guy is looking, just too old now. It's just
That's the nature point. Of the beast.
Yeah,
we're looking at X-Men at least 5 years down the road, and Professor X is way too important of a character in all of the mutant life that you can't have that actor die and you recast or write him out. Like, you, granted, accidents happen. Like, no one would have guessed freaking Chadwick. Like,
yeah,
he kept that to himself.
Yeah.
And, but like, also, you can't like choose someone like years away from their deathbed. Like, you have to at least make an attempt. And I don't know. I just do not want him as Professor X.
With him specifically, they just shot two seasons of the Picard show like at the same time because they literally don't know how much time they have with him.
Right. And so it comes to this point of, is everyone that we like, I hope to God we get a good John Krasinski Mr. Fantastic.
They can do
I
it.
I hope he is our MCU Mr. Fantastic.
They can do it. They will it's do even, it.
It's rumored, but that is like, does that just prove that he's our Professor X as well? Because all of the Doctor Stranges look the same. They're all Benedict Cumberbatch. All of the forgettable Rachel Adams character. I forget her name. Christine.
You forgot.
Christine was played by the same actress.
Yeah.
Like,
I think they can absolutely have had Patrick Stewart as the MCU's Professor X, and then down the line introduce. I think James McAvoy is a fantastic Charles Xavier, and I think he would do great in the MCU. I think they could reintroduce him as a younger Professor X without skipping a beat. I think that would be perfect. I'm all for that.
I agree, but they need to do it without leaning on the multiverse.
Well, here's the deal.
Coming full circle to
I don't see how they can't at this point.
I think they absolutely can.
Yeah.
I think they absolutely
Where
can.
Are
because they? they did in the X-Men movies, they had an older Professor X and a younger Professor X in the same movie. He's just a younger Charles Xavier in the universe. Like, that's
Days of Future Past.
That's all they need to do. And they don't need to complicate it.
I know it's...
But where have the X-Men been this whole time?
That is a completely different question.
No, it's the same question. That how do you get them in the MCU without leaning on the multiverse? Because if you take out the multiverse, then they've been here the whole time. Hulk snap. How do you tell that story?
That's your question. I'm answering Tice's question that James McAvoy is a fantastic Professor X and he'll fit great in the MCU. My answer.
Just personally, the character never did it for me. Fassbender, best Magneto ever. McAvoy, it just didn't work for me.
I feel like that's the movie. Not great. McAvoy though. Those movies were.
Here's two things.
I liked them for the most part.
Here's two things. Okay. As far as X-Men coming into the MCU. I heard Cade say Hulk snap. That's a very, very common theory and could very well happen. One that I've kind of thought up and I'm a little partial to because it's my own creation is that Kang has specifically altered history, whether it be genetically or through time, to keep X-Men out of it because things got too complicated or too messy. And somehow that's going to break maybe in Quantum Mania or however it might be. I think that'd be cool. And
if I would have known that they weren't going to acknowledge the giant hand that came out of the ocean, they should have just done it in Eternals like it should have been.
Right.
And then we couldn't acknowledge it for 5 years.
Oh, yeah, the giant hand.
What we're going to do anyway.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Real quick, I'll piggyback off of what Michael said. Like, maybe that's the judgment that the Celestials are going to cast upon Earth is the X gene.
Right.
And I don't know if we said that before in a previous podcast.
That's sick, actually.
Yeah.
I think that might have been mentioned in our Eternal podcast. And then my one other thing is once you see with the whole multiverse thing, once you start to see different universes, individuals played by the same person, like, for example, Strange, every Doctor Strange has been played by Benedict Cumberbatch. You can start to think that once you see someone playing a role, then that's just the face and the person associated with them. But we have to remember they've also showed different people, most notably Spider-Man. Spider-Man has not looked the same or been played by the same actor because we had No Way Home. Captain Marvel. Well,
that's actually a good point.
Captain Marvel, just in this film, you know, it wasn't Brie Larson. So there's.
I didn't even think about.
How about Loki?
Freaking.
Yeah.
He was played by a black dude and an alligator. Like,
alligator,
you got options, baby.
Yeah.
So to counter the Maria Rambeau thing, like, that was just a circumstance of who got into that seat of the jet.
Sure.
The other one.
Yeah.
Right. But like,
Spider-Man's just who got bit by the spider. Spider-Man thing. You know?
Right, but both of those are Peter Parker. The Maria Rambeau thing is a totally different person.
Sure.
Yeah.
And but like you said, the Loki thing, like there's a freaking alligator.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So
I wanna turn onto a question I had. We talked about it off mic. It might be a stupid question. I apparently don't remember the first Doctor Strange movie very well. What I do remember is what was the animated Disney Plus thing where they started doing all these
what if
you obviously remember it well. Yeah.
Super well. So there's the episode, which I would argue might be the best one in the whole show, where Doctor Strange is trying to keep Christine Palmer from getting killed over and over again and does all this stuff because this it's absolute point in time. Did she not die in the first movie? Because I'm just not remembering.
She did not.
Okay, then what the frick was the point of that episode if it's an absolute point in time?
It's what if, Doctor, like, it was a absolute point of time in that universe.
But don't we discern by watching that show that all of those what ifs are things that are actually happening in different multiverses?
Right. But it was an absolute point in that
multiverse. Okay.
Right, because also in a different multiverse, Steve Rogers is the
president?
Hydra Stomper.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And the president. So like
and Captain Hydra.
And Captain Hydra. Okay. Right. So
well that was my last
and Human Torch
of
no.
that character. And I
wait
about that.
Now hold on.
Flame on.
Now hold on.
That was my last memory of that character because I don't think I watched Doctor Strange more than the one time I saw it in theaters. So it had been a while. So I just wanted to clarify that for any of the listeners who were potentially in the same boat I was.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. For sure.
Before we get into favorite parts, I want to have a conversation that will most likely take us well over the hour mark here.
Oh boy.
So. Feige came out when Iron Man came out and said that this is Earth 199999, whatever. We go to Earth 838 and we get Christine saying that we are what we're watching is 616.
Mm.
Granted, that's a random scientist and a random universe happening to label it 616. We get freaking Jake Gyllenhaal Mysterio just on accident mentioning that we're on Earth 616. But then in Loki, in the reel that Jordan and I were debating the other day, it freaking says 616 on the reel. And I just assumed that it was just, much like the Mysterio thing, was just an Easter egg. But at this point, like, two is a coincidence, three is a pattern. Like,
right.
Are they going to say that this is Earth 616, or do we go by the Feige 1999999999?
I think we have to go by what we see on screen, right? Like,
right.
I don't see anywhere in MCU storytelling where we've discussed multiverse 199999 or whatever. But 616 has now been mentioned twice and once in a kind of a cameo-y thinking, if not more times than that.
Twice, like semi-factually, and then once in like a
big, bold, in-your-face, like, look at this sort of way.
Right.
And since Multiverse of Madness has come out, I don't know who exactly, but a producer came out and said that the MCU was in fact 616.
Right.
Weird.
I think there's just a little retcon there is all it is.
as we saw in like when they're splitting universes with America, like the digital, like the cartoon, a paint universe, mm-hmm. like all of them coexist. So like
right.
saying that this is 616 means that it doesn't exist alongside the comic versions, which is weird.
What?
Because the main universe in the comics is 616, right. which is what all of the quote unquote Easter eggs are supposed to be leaning to. But that means that the two can't exist together.
Here's what I would say. I'd say two things. First of all, I'd say, I think back then when people were asking Feige, I think he honestly just said one and then as many nines as he felt like saying. Because at that right. point, it might not have been clearly made for him, or that was just Feige having some fun. What better way to troll a fan base? But
hopping him off.
Yeah, regardless of that, something that I think would be really interesting, clear a lot of the water up, and just, I think, make things a lot cooler is if we see 616 is what King has deemed that universe. If he's the one numbering, because we've seen
if he's the one that says it, then it's an actual fact.
Well,
it's like he's the time god.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. Like, what is a numbered universe but someone slapping a number to a universe? What makes it
right?
You know, we call the comic books world 616. What if it's a different universe, but them in the MCU decide to call it 616? It's too early to say.
It's like two football teams right. saying they're both number one. Like,
right.
you can do that. One of them's wrong, but you can do that.
Right.
And the MCU is wrong because the comics are 616.
Or someone's looking at it and they see a 9 and another person's looking at it and they see a 6, you know?
So,
right.
So
I just wanted to mention it because...
Maybe it's 919. Why not both? You don't know.
So pertaining to that, that thought, Tice, I had a theory when we were walking out of the theater, when I was still leaning on the idea that the MCU is in fact 19999, was that that film we just watched, Multiverse of Madness, was not the Strange that we saw at any point before in the MCU films, and that he was in fact from a universe very close to the one that we'd seen,
that
but was in fact a different one.
That'd be wild.
That's actually crazy. And
I could maybe get behind that,
because
just with how,
because then it wouldn't ruin the Good Doctor.
Like, it's one of those things.
Well, yeah,
where like everything is so spitting image perfect, except like, well, Steve's not left-handed, he's right-handed. Like, just those little
right.
things.
I did like the fact that, so we get dropped into New York in the 838 universe, and it's the universe that Reed Richards is obviously around, and like New York is this lush utopia where like Empire State Building has a waterfall coming off of it. Everything is green. Like,
it's like, it's very future steampunky, kind of weird.
It is, but it's like they figured out how to make, you know, living in a city not so bad for Earth, which is what, you know, that's something that's very Reed Richards-esque. Like, I did really appreciate that.
I took that as that world or that universe being further along in their timeline than ours or our 616.
Agreed.
Is what it seemed like to me, which is interesting because that then begs the whole question of time and could tie in with Kang and the fact that these individuals like Strange are existing at the same time, but the universes they're existing in don't seem to match up timeline-wise.
Yeah.
That's
something I think we're forgetting here is we are talking about, you know, a fourth and fifth dimension now, right? We have time, which was introduced in Infinity War, and different universes coexisting. So that's like the fourth and fifth dimension, and they can both be changed and altered to get things to be weird. So
yeah,
wrap your head around that.
Right, right. Okay, let's get on to the second point of
nailed it
of the podcast. What are your guys' favorite parts?
I'll start us off. I I don't know if this is breaking the rules, but I have two real quick. One is very fast and simple, and the other has a little explanation.
I have a feeling a lot of ours are going to overlap.
Right. But. One that's fast and simple and just really set a lot of the tone that I enjoyed about it, because, again, I did give this film a 7, even though it feels like we just complained for an hour. I really, really enjoyed Scarlet Witch crawling out of the gong. That made my skin crawl in all the best ways. Like, so spooky. Untwisting and
the
snapping and turning and the total spookiness when you see her embodied. The embodiment of the Scarlet Witch. You also get to see that when she kills Xavier in the Mindscape. She does not look like Wanda. She looks like something different. So I really like that. It was quick and simple. That whole scene of covering up the reflections was really cool. Other one that I really liked, just because I thought it was a super cool Easter egg, but very subtle. The explanation that goes with it, anyone that doesn't know, Kang is a way, way, way down the line descendant of Reed Richards. And for anyone paying attention, when Reed Richards first shows up with that teleportation, that is super the same technology the TVA uses. It's just blue rather than orange. So that was a really cool reference to Kang down the road in the TVA as a whole. So that was something subtle but really cool.
To attach to that, this isn't my favorite part or whatever, but he's sitting there talking to Wanda and he explains that he has children, which is his daughter is the mother of the original Kang.
Yeah.
So, there are ties there, which are pretty cool. But, Cade, what were your favorite parts?
Okay. I really liked in the third act. Well, second act, when they're Wong and Scarlet Witch are traveling to the mountaintop where they're reading the walls that are the text of the Darkhold. The servants, like the red demon servants that are just like patiently waiting for the Scarlet Witch. That was cool. And then when Strange picks up the Darkhold and reads from it, and is it Dreamskate?
Dreamwalk.
Is that what it's called?
Dreamwalking.
Dreamwalk. Heard it both ways. does it, and like the demons are like pulling out at him, and I just thought that was really like a really cool metal themed, and then like zombie Defender Strange just with like how he can control those demons.
Demon cape.
Really so cool. We're supposed to be talking about really cool about good moments here, but Cade just referenced one of the moments that I freaking hated is when remind me of her name again. Christine's defending Doctor Strange when all the demons come out.
I knew you were going to bring this up.
And she freaking grabs the torch and then she, all serious, goes,
Go back to hell.
And then blast. That was the cheesiest shit I've ever heard in my life, and it does not belong in the
that
movie.
That was so Raimi.
Speaking of it belongs in this film for two reasons. The first, well, they both actually know one reason.
The movie's bad and the audio's
best.
Bad.
Wow.
Continue.
No, the best part of this movie is Pizza Papa.
Oh, yeah.
It is freaking Bruce Campbell being Pizza Papa. It's Raimi. Cheesy and he, Army of Darkness.
Go back to hell.
I audibly in the theater went, get that shit out. Like, I actually said it. Like, I was so upset when she said it. Okay, favorite moment, Leroy.
Okay, I kind of have 1.5, I'd say.
Good stuff for me, you pricks.
I think probably one of my favorite parts of this movie happened early on, and it's the fight. Right after Strange realizes something's going wrong and he jumps off the balcony from the wedding and he goes and fights this monster in the streets. Wong shows up, he's fighting with him. Yeah. I loved all the magical weapons and all the attempts to subdue this monster they had. I really enjoyed that entire fight scene. And I think that's probably one of my favorite parts of the movie. And then I'd say like the half is Zombie Strange with all of the demons wrapped around him as like his cloak rather than the, I can't remember what the cloak is called that he uses normally, but it's kind of in a replacement of that cloak. It's all these demons like working for him. I thought that was fantastic. Yeah. It looked amazing.
Cloak of levitation. Yeah. Yeah.
Very cool.
Wow.
Jordan, we're gonna, if you steal mine, I'm going to be upset.
We're going to get all the way to me without mine being said. So this movie
I'm feeling you're about to say mine.
Called Doctor Strange.
The credits.
And there was nothing stranger than that music battle. And I loved every second of it.
Same. Dude, when he grabs the music notes and throws them, and then Evil Strange blocks them, and then it goes, na 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 na.
It was really cool.
And sends them back. I'm like, oh, that is the evilest, like, dopest thing I've ever seen.
Yep. How, was,
and once, how is that so not cheesy, top, though?
I just couldn't. It was. It was one of those. But it was a good cheesy. So over the top, it was good.
Right.
Because nobody else has the balls to do that besides Sam Raimi. Love it.
And you can't put that in any other movie other than a Doctor Strange
movie.
Like, weaponizing music notes, that is such a Doctor Strange thing to do.
Yeah.
And very cool. Right when he started grabbing them off the page, I was like, come on again. But then, like, it was totally redeemed because every note he threw was actually a note. Like, if you listen to it again, I went for a second time and I really paid attention to that scene as it's passing. It's the actual note that was on the freaking page. So cool.
Yeah.
And then he freaking blocks it with, I'm not a musician, but like, what are the bars like that are actually on like a sheet of music? He creates that to block the freaking notes.
Yeah. Right?
To catch it was so cool.
That's cool.
And that's cool.
It was hands down my favorite scene.
Since, oh yeah, for sure. And since everybody gets a half. My half would be when you see the reveal of the castle in the mountains, because that is almost the spitting image of a moment we had in one of our D&D games at one point. So,
ooh, I choose not to remember that moment.
Nice.
It's a good moment.
I don't know what my half is.
Mm.
If I'm being honest, I just have the music notes. I wanted to like the post-credit scene, but I will air my grievances when we get to that.
I will say that Wanda being the villain was I did not see it coming. I was not anticipating it, and I was completely
even
surprised.
Even though Michael and I were screaming,
I was just
going to
say,
we've been saying that for like a year and a half.
That's fine. It's fine. I still wasn't anticipating it, and I was glad not to have that spoiled by the promotional material.
Agreed.
Jordan, I'm right there with you. I was hoping. So I think a big criticism that I'll probably get a lot is I kind of anticipate a movie before I go see it. I try not to do it, but I did it. I was expecting one movie, saw another. I was really hoping this movie would kind of fall back to the whole point of Mordo and Doctor Strange, is that the bill always comes due. And I was kind of hoping that this movie would have been like Doctor Strange against himself, a little bit more facing the consequences of No Way Home. Mm. Because messing with time tends to slap back.
I don't think you're lost on that point, though, because I feel that's what the end credits scene is building up to.
Yeah.
Sure, but I don't think that was communicated very well, at least to me. Yeah. So for me, the bill still needs to come due, and I don't know where it's going to be in another Doctor Strange movie, but it just didn't. It just stinks because, like, going back to like Captain America and then Winter Soldier, just like how kind of everything all connected. I was just really disappointed how Mordo was written in this movie, because I was really hoping to get the bill comes due. That was even in the marketing materials, and they never said it in the movie, and it just made me so mad.
You know what else they didn't say that I was waiting for the whole freaking time?
It's about things are getting out of
That's
hand.
That's it.
They just got out of
That's
hand.
The
yeah.
one. I was waiting for it the whole time.
Yep. So
that was a huge boner killer for me, because I thought that guy was Strange Supreme. Totally wasn't. And
agreed.
I was like, oh, man.
Yep.
Shoot. Oh, well.
Yep. And some context, I just like listening to reviews, and I'll just touch upon this briefly. Just like the creative direction, or like specifically the story of this film, like Scott Derrickson, who did the first Doctor Strange, is also known for like doing The Exorcist of Emily Rose.
Directing?
Okay. Yeah, director. Yep, the director. Yep. And there was a creative difference, and that's when Sam Raimi was brought on. And you can, I can see that there are two different films in this movie.
Oh.
And that's just such a, it's such a shame, because I would really, I loved the first Doctor Strange, and like I rewatched it, and it was just so like setting up like the basics of like, magic just doesn't appear. You're pulling that energy from a different dimension. Right. You're pulling it from a different multiverse into maybe see like where that magic gets pulled from and the consequences of using the magic, specifically the magic used in No Way Home. I think that could have been a really dark, and we did get dark themes, and this is a horror movie in the MCU. But it's just a real shame that
multiverse of miscommunication.
Yep.
Yep. That's a good synopsis. That's a
fantastic title for this episode.
Yep. I one of my favorite parts really was Wanda and how spooky they made her be, but it felt like so much surrounding that and things like the Illuminati and all of that made it fall kind of flat.
To that point, they needed a horror director for this. They needed to make Wanda this absolute monster.
Yeah.
And make her feel creepy and make her feel like have her crawl out of a gong, see an eyeball in a puddle because she's trying to like get through, snap necks. Like that's what like she's supposed to be. So you needed that. But also like I didn't realize that the director switched halfway through. I feel really bad for being so like hard on it.
It makes a lot of sense knowing that
it shows. It shows
now that you actually made that point. It shows a lot. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
We
kind of actually go ahead, boss.
No, I was just gonna say that like I think that they tried to do a lot of different things and ended up not doing a lot of things well. Like, especially in terms of the Illuminati and the Darkhold and those things. And I think it would be better if they were going to do the Illuminati to show her defeat them more creatively. Like, not purely just physically, but, like more personally defeat each of them. Like, break Captain Carter's morale, break Reed Richards' mind, you know, and then do all of them in a different sense to show her total depravity due to her exposure to the Darkhold, and or like I said, just her don't have it in
power instead of just being a tank,
right? Or show that like maybe she assesses that she can't defeat them, but maintains her focus on her goal and somehow, you know, illusions out of it and has them totally distracted, and you realize that she's not even there, quote unquote, fighting them the whole time. She's down in the catacombs going for America Chavez, you know, like something like that. Make her equally as scary and a threat, but in a different way that doesn't undermine the other characters she's on screen with.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And that's a good transition. I wanted to address a little bit more of the cameo stuff. And I know I mentioned it earlier, but like, I just don't want the MCU to get to the point that they're lean. Like, I felt like this was attempting to crutch on the cameos. Like, they leaned a lot on it. And I just want, like, I want new characters introduced, but I don't want, like, the whole thing. Because even the marketing material for this movie, it wasn't about the movie. It was about the Illuminati. And, like, we were all here in the Discord chat, join on any of our socials. We were all super disappointed that, like, they showed Captain Carter in the promotional material. Like, I don't like that. I do not agree with that. Like,
yeah.
And it's, I want new characters, and but I don't want them to be the point of the movie. And I feel like this whole thing, they were just constantly promoting who's going to be the, like, in the Illuminati, who's going to be in it, who's going to play them, who's going to...
I don't think they were doing that. I think that was us.
I think that's a little bit of both. I think we hyped it up pretty stinking hard. Yo. Just in, like, the little snippets of what we saw. But I think that also speaks to a problem overall with probably movies in general, but specifically the MCU revealing way, way, way too much in trailers rather than just, like, letting them happen in the movie in front of you rather than, like, having... Not having Charles Xavier say something in one of those trailers and then having him show up in the movie would have been a completely different experience for me.
Yeah. Like, dude, my heart would have dropped out of my body. Like,
watching and not 100%. Knowing that he was about to show up would have destroyed me. I would have lost my mind.
Can you imagine seeing the yellow wheelchair and hearing and not knowing he's going to show
up?
But then, 10 seconds later,
I would have been more disappointed.
That would have made it even harder. But
right,
that goes back to having stuff like that in the trailers. Just absolutely destroys the experience of actually watching it happen in the movie.
Yeah.
And I don't get why they keep doing that.
Yeah,
agreed. And we're like us as a Destiny clan are going through it right now. Like, we don't know what's coming on Tuesday, but I think all of us are happy that they're waiting until Tuesday to let us know.
Yeah.
Like, that's awesome. Like, I want to play the game and learn what's new, and I don't want it sooner than what I can actually get my hands on my mouse and keyboard.
Like, yeah.
Like, imagine you went to go watch Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness, and had no clue that they were about to touch on Illuminati stuff in a different universe.
Yeah.
Imagine going to that movie and experiencing
it. The Illuminati will see you now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that would have been insane.
I would be like, oh my freaking gosh, what's about to happen? Is Namor going to show up? Like, are we going to see Black Bolt? And then at that time, I see freaking John Krasinski show up as... Like, my brain would have freaking melted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And on the point of the Illuminati stuff, I touched on going, like, a stranger going into these movies. The Illuminati did not hit the not nerds very well.
Yeah.
Because
who the frick is a Black Bolt, right?
Right. Well, that and just, like, the Illuminati. Like, that in real life is very conspiracy theory-esque, you know? Like, and... everyone that didn't know that they were, like, they were in the comics a very long time ago. Like, they've been a thing for a while. But, like, when one of the gals I was sitting with, when Mordo said, "The Illuminati will see you now," she was just like, "Oh, my God." Like, she was
We had a chick next to us who just busted out laughing, like, what? It's
freaking comical.
It was so funny. It was actually really funny.
Agreed. But, like, I don't know. I just wanted to touch on those. I know we got into, like, the cool parts, but I just wanted to touch on
those. You mentioned Black Bolt. I'm not even going to go into several different things about that. But I didn't realize in watching the movie that the dude playing Black Bolt is the same actor that played him in the
critically acclaimed television show.
Yeah,
that
the
we
TV
all
show. I never
watched and thoroughly enjoyed.
I never dipped my toes into that series, but realizing after all of that that was the same actor, I thought that was cool. I thought that
it is very cool.
Neat.
Yep. He's also a cool cowboy in Hell on Wheels.
I bet that was a really good cameo for the five people that watched
it. Yeah, I bet they were real excited.
Oof.
Yeah. The guys that didn't dip their toes in, they accidentally fell in the Inhumans pool.
The four critics that made that critically acclaimed, I bet they whizzed their pants.
Yep. That's rough. It feels.
I imagine Leonardo DiCaprio meme.
It feels bad though because
the snapping.
Like, I still like, just because I know the comics, I know Black Bolt, and I was very excited for that. And it took me like a second to realize that it was the same guy, and I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's how the character's written. I don't think it's any fault of the actresses, but when they're going through the whole cast of the Illuminati, I was like excited and fist pumping or even cheering for all of them except for Captain Marvel. I don't know why. I just did not have any excitement.
It's because she's
Black
Michael.
No, it's just it. Like, it wasn't anything, any fault of the actress or anything like that. It's just, I don't know what, I don't even know what to assess from that other than a lack of interest
exactly
in the character.
You're trying to say.
I don't know. Yeah.
Because you were never invested in her character in the other movie to begin with.
I guess.
It has nothing to do with her acting, anything like that. It's that we don't care about Captain Marvel.
in the MCU. In the comics, it's different. And yes, I don't know why or what that is, but I think that's just a serious misrepresentation or miswrite of the character. And that's not exclusive to this film.
I have been scorched by people that I hold dear in my life because of my hatred for the Captain Marvel movie.
Mm.
But she gets an entire movie, and I could give a crap less what happens to her the entire time. Like, the highlight of that movie is the fact that we get Skrulls.
Right.
That's the only thing I pull
and Goose.
Out of it.
All hail Goose.
From that movie, I enjoyed younger Fury with younger Coulson doing S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff. That's the highlight of my my experience with that movie.
But to that point, None of us care about Captain Marvel.
Right.
Not a single one of us.
Like,
and to just
I don't know,
put a different person in that suit, all of us are just like, okay.
Ew.
Right.
Like, yeah.
Take us home, Tice.
Okay, to wrap it up, future things, what this implies, and I kind of wanted to touch on, not everyone knows, it's Clea.
Yeah,
Charlize Theron pops in for a couple minutes, and we see the Dark Dimension again.
Yeah,
she is related to Dormammu, and they go on all these crazy adventures and everything like that. And it's actually Doctor Strange's wife.
Yeah.
Eventual wife.
In certain timelines.
Correct. But this is one of the biggest parts of it that I'm completely torn with, because I'm happy to see her character. Once again, it had to be in this movie. I understand that, but just the way I felt about the movie, I'm sad that it happened in this movie. And also, like, Doctor Strange is tied up now with what they're doing. Like, you can't just have him pop into, like, say we get a Young Avengers. He has to wrap up what he's doing with her first.
Right.
Like, He's in the Dark Dimension for a very, very long time. Like, we essentially just lost Doctor Strange for the foreseeable future, which is fine because we have a lot coming down the pipeline with Ant-Man, and like, the Quantumania is going to freaking change the game, because that's when we officially get Kang.
But we said about this movie.
Right. But like, I don't know.
I think all these films have the potential to change the game. It's just we didn't see it in the capacity we thought or hoped we would in this one. We'll see with Thor, and we'll see, you know, as we go forward.
I feel like the MCU is really struggling to move forward. Like, I just don't. I'm sure it's going somewhere. I just don't see where.
Right. It
agreed. I felt the Infinity Saga
circles.
It took a very long time, obviously, to get where we were, because I was a child when I first started watching them. But like, I felt like every movie outside of maybe one or two, we were leaps and like, I could see the Infinity Saga like building up. But to your point, like, I don't, obviously Kang is our end destination, and I don't know like how we're getting there between the Disney Plus series and all of the movies. Part of me, I was going to make this my final point, but while I'm rambling here, I just really miss the days when we were dealing with Earth problems.
Like an assassin for Hydra.
Exactly. And Hydra is trying to nuke the East Coast. Like, that is a problem that is very solvable by, like,
a man with a shield.
The airships. Right, yeah. Exactly. And I sound like I'm fanboying for Cap right now, which I kind of am, but like,
who wouldn't?
I also miss, like,
you know,
but like Whiplash, he was a very, like, his purpose mm-hmm. was known. Like, he just literally wanted to kill Tony.
Right. Yeah.
And like, mm-hmm. I just miss those days. And I know we can't go back because we've already opened the can of worms of the multiverse. But I think that's why I personally enjoyed Moon Knight so much. It was Earth problems again. Like, yes, yeah. there was moon gods problems. and deities and everything like that. And there was a magic suit that wrapped around him. Like, that's crazy. But
yeah,
it's still like down to earth issues.
Yeah. Here's to hoping Fantastic sense. Four and maybe potentially, hopefully, Doctor Doom. We might get more of that, more Earth-centered things.
Right. You think maybe? Yeah. You think maybe that's the plan? You think we don't see X-Men yet because we're building towards a Kang finale that basically is just a multiversal nuke that resets everything, and then we're back to square one in an MCU where we get to tell all these stories all over again now that Disney owns more properties.
I
kind of
hope so. And I feel like that's why I feel partially different from No Way Home in this movie. Like, at the end of the movie, I felt entirely different. Not because of the quality of movie or anything, but we get Peter going back to the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Like, he is, like, he's back to being Spider-Man. He's not flying out into outer space. He's not doing anything like that. And then with Doctor Strange, granted, he's a little bit, like, more mystical and everything. But, like, he disappears into the dark dimension, and we still don't have any bows tied up with the multiverse. Like,
right. I think that's simply because this is, again,
didn't
my interpretation of this. I think that once we saw in Loki, He Who Remains, or a Kang variant, being killed by Sylvie, that opened up the multiversal potential. And the way that I see it, or interpret it at least, is why we haven't seen mutants thus far, is because that was yet another variable that would have made things more complicated, and that Kang, He Who Remains, was keeping that on lock. Now that no one's watching that or managing that, I think we eventually see it, but I think that's also why we have so much going on near the same time, because it's all being spurred on after there's no referee anymore, and all this is happening at once.
Yeah, agreed.
That's what I'd say, at least.
Agreed. And you guys, like Jordan, Cade, Leroy, you guys have any theories on where we're going in the future?
Going back to my earlier point, was this movie seemed kind of inconsequential, but still seemed pretty, like, a lot of big things happened,
right.
But it seemed like there was just no, like, end point to them, I guess.
There's a lot of continue your thought.
Yeah. I guess I don't know where we're going. I'm not sure what this film is trying to set up. Like, maybe something is going to come out in the future that's going to make all of this make sense. That's kind of what I'm hoping for.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, maybe at some point we're going to look back and be like, oh, this was happening here, this was happening there. But I don't know.
You said
I thought this movie was going to do so much in terms of, like, what was going to happen next, but it didn't seem to do that. And now I'm just wondering where we go from here, I guess.
You said the word, Leroy. You said inconsequential. And that's what I feel like so many of the movies we've gotten, potentially all of them since Endgame, have been. Shang-Chi was great, but it didn't do anything. Eternals was okay, and it set up what should have been this incredibly consequential moment, but it didn't do anything because we haven't seen consequences play out sequentially like we did with literally every single other Marvel movie from phases 1 to 3.
Right.
Yeah.
And here we are yet again having no connection to any other movie aside from saying something about Spider-Man and just. We're not doing anything. We're spinning our wheels.
Right. And I feel like that's why I'm getting beat down, is because I go into all of these movies. Like, I went into Eternals thinking, hey, we're going to get the origins of the X-Men. Like, at least an explanation of it. And then we didn't get it. And then, like, this, I went in thinking, like, much like what Leroy just said, I thought this was going to actually, like, put the future out on the table, like, what we're driving towards. And then we just, you know, we're at a dead end again.
Yeah.
I've got my final thought, and it's in the form of a question, so.
So maybe we should start with your final
thought. You want to start with it? Okay.
Okay, did you have a final note?
My final note is I agree with everything that was just said, and I am excited for Love and Thunder, but I'm going to taper some expectations back.
Yeah, I think I'm going to as well. That being said, that'd be healthy
for all of us.
Yeah. I'm going to pull back some of my expectations, but like I said, that movie has a lot riding on it for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Trailer looks great. Promos look great. And I think I don't want to see anything else except for the movie.
If anyone can save my faith in the current state of MCU, it's Takai.
Taika Waititi, baby, let's go. Yeah.
What's your question?
It actually kind of pertains to what you just said and tempering your expectations. Endgame left us on such a high. Can we be happy with anything going forward with the bar set where that set it?
So,
I think Loki accomplished that for me.
To start out, I would say no, but I think we can ramp up to something that is just as good. Like, a Kang final battle, or a Kang, like, wind-up, that there's a lot of stuff that goes into Kang that I would be very happy to see on the silver screen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, will I tear up because Cap picks up Mjolnir? Probably not. But, like... What kind of sucks is we used a lot of the really good characters really early. So, like, and Mark Ruffalo has expressed that he doesn't want to be Hulk when he's 60. So, like, that's another 2-3 movies with him.
And Disney's gotten really, really anal about recasting here in the last decade or so.
Right. And I don't necessarily want them to recast. Like, if we're going to say goodbye to Hulk, I'd rather say goodbye to Hulk and then get, like, a Hulkling. Like, I'd rather there'd be a different character than a different actor playing the same character, if that makes sense.
Well, you got She-Hulk and that fine CGI in the trailer.
Bro, that's a... I could do another hour and a half podcast.
Different things, man. I think...
I don't care what you say. The CG was bad, but I dream of being carried away of a woman of that stature.
She's 100% so a mommy.
Shut your mouth. Like,
no complaints here.
Funny. Yeah. What do you guys think about that? Can we be happy again?
I was just going to say, I think...
I kind of forgot. I forgot the question because we started talking about She-Hulk.
two very specific things have to happen for us to have that same Endgame style excitement. A, we as viewers need to acknowledge and understand that we're playing a different game now. We're not building to Endgame. We're building to X, whatever it may be. So we need to...
I would love it if we were building to X.
We need to taper and manage our expectations and our wants accordingly. And B... We need to have the films sequentially building and connecting to facilitate something as such, which I think both areas have been lacking quite a bit in recent times. I think I have not, just speaking purely of myself, done a good job of my expectations and things I think are going to happen going into films. And I don't think Marvel has done a great job of connecting things in a meaningful way. Can it happen? Absolutely. I agree.
Too many cooks in the kitchen.
Right. Leroy, can we be happy again?
I think we can be happy again. I think I think, like Michael said, we need to temper our expectations. We've been going into the past couple movies and series with a lot of expectations about, like, where it's going to leave us, where it's going to lead to. I think we need to stop doing that as strongly as we have and maybe just start enjoying these comic book movies again like we used to.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think we'll be happy again, though.
I enjoyed this film. I want to make that clear again. I enjoyed Multiverse of Madness.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
I did not enjoy it.
I want to be clear in saying I have enjoyed Marvel stuff the past couple of years. I have enjoyed these movies. I have enjoyed these TV shows, but it does seem like sometimes writing is lacking, sometimes direction is lacking. But I think we're on the right track for something big to happen here in the next several years, probably in league with Endgame and all of that.
I hope you're That's what right, I hope anyway. And I think you're wrong.
Go ahead, Cade.
Cade, go ahead.
Yeah. I know. It's just kind of nice to actually see other people talk about kind of things I've been talking about since Spider-Man. And because that's how I felt with Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And I really want Marvel to somehow find the right balance between keeping their ear to the ground with what we want as fans versus exactly what you were talking about, Tice, earlier, is like writing good stories, like make a good movie. Mm-hmm. Make a movie that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Make a movie that connects everything. Make a movie that, yeah, it's a good movie that's about comic book characters rather than like good comic book character movies. Right. I'm happy because I'm reading comics again. But then again, it falls into the temptation of like, oh, what if this happens? What if this happens? Yeah. And I think I really fell into that with Doctor Strange, and it really affected my opinion of the movie, and I don't know if I really need to see this movie again.
I went twice. You don't need to go again.
It was cool. Really cool things happened, and exactly what you said, Leroy. Like a lot of big things happened, but it just the follow through.
Yeah,
really didn't
connect. I liked it more than Eternals.
Jordan, do you have an answer to your own question?
I sat in a theater with over half of you and screamed at the top of my lungs at that scream during the fight in Endgame. The last time I got that worked up was in episode 2 of Star Wars, over a decade before that. And I'd like to think that magic's coming back to me at some point in time, but I'm not holding my breath.
Mm. Yeah. My official answer to your question is, I think I can be happy again, and I think the answer to that happiness will be the Young Avengers, the Thunderbolts, or the X-Men. I think those will all hit that same nerve for me.
Midnight Suns.
Because, and that.
Yep.
That's I actually think that is my number one above all of the others right
now. It's X-Men for me.
Yeah, I think so.
Dude, Midnight Suns, with the lineup that they're going to get, like, let's face it, they're getting Norman Reedus as Ghost Rider at this point. Like,
I would be excited about that, but I think it's the nostalgia factor that did it right. How many of the people who watched Endgame had grown up with those characters? And we're getting into a point now where we're getting characters that are like, they're deeper cuts, and some fewer people just know about them, so there's less of us who are connecting to them on a longer timeline, but not X-Men. We've all been watching X-Men since 1997 at the latest. And
well, same if we get Spider-Man and his Fantastic Friends, which is Spider-Man and the Fantastic Four chilling together.
Right.
Like,
but he has no friends anymore. Fair. That's my whole point. He can that was the entire point.
Friends. He can make new spider friends.
He had friends Strangers already. Are just friends it's so you haven't met stupid. Yet. I hate this
so much.
And we've ran out of time.
You're taking three steps backwards to take a step forward, and we're going in a circle.
We went too long.
Jane Kane, is that you?
You're proving my point months later. You're doing it for me.
Security?
I can't believe those words came out of your mouth. Like, I have been preaching how much the writing of Spider-Man undid so many things that it could have done. And I didn't even bring it up. You said it. You guys said it.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't you. It was, I love you, and it's, like, I love all of you guys, but I'm just saying, you just proved my point. It's like, what if we get Spider-Man and his amazing friends? It's like, bitch, we had that so long ago!
Oh, God.
Sorry.
Okay.
On that note. I rest my case. I'm happy you said it.
I'm happy
someone else said it and not me. That made my week.
Seeing my
baby's face for the first time and you saying that made my week.
Oh.
I am so happy. I probably just woke my wife.
That's a good chance.
Boomers, I appreciate you all listening. If you made it to the end, thank you. I hope you had a laugh. I hope you enjoyed our take on it. If you enjoyed the movie, I would be more than happy to have a conversation with you and figure out why or what you watched. I thank you all for listening, and you're the reason we do it, and we enjoy doing it, and yeah, just thank you guys.
Mm-hmm. So we don't Laters Gators this one, right?
I was going to say, Laters Gators?
Okay. Right. Everybody, 3, 2, 1.
Laters Gators! That's crazy.